Welcome back to People's Guide to Publishing. I am your host, Joe Beal, the autistic publisher, author of A People's Guide to Publishing, the book, and founder and CEO of Microcosm.
I'm Ellie Blue. I'm the editorial and marketing director and co-owner of Microcosm, publishing and distribution. Branding at work, y'all.
I feel a little underbranded this week. This week, we are going to talk about branding.
Branding, not cattle.
Depending on what kind of books you publish, maybe you have two kinds of branding to talk about. Most of the time, when people talk about branding in publishing, the brand is the author.
Mm-hmm.
The author is like the most notable brand on the book. They have their name on the front cover for a reason. It's the brand.
That's true. You don't usually put the publisher's name on the front cover. Some people do, but...
We're looking at you, Penguin. That's one of the number three reason that people buy a book. And it's the number one reason that people buy a fiction book.
It's
because of
brand.
The author. And so, if you look at it that way, you know, it's like everything the author's done, the author's notoriety, the author's work elsewhere, you know, maybe. And then, you know, things like Google results, things like that. But more importantly... And more typically, it's other books the author has written that the reader enjoys, or the account buyer enjoys, the store enjoys, you know, the employees of the store enjoy.
Which is why publishing mostly runs on these unbelievable best-selling authors.
Yeah.
Like, the whole economy is tied up in the Danielle Steeles and John Grishams and Dean Kuntzes.
That was something that I did not talk about in our episode from Winter Institute that suddenly feels very relevant now, is that what I learned... is, and that's sort of why most independent bookstores are so ubiquitous in, like, how they appear, what they offer, what they sell, is they are sort of chained to and expected to carry all of the, you know, most popular mystery novels. They're expected to have all these romance novels. They're expected to have, you know, essentially all of the heavily marketed big budget books from the big five publishers, because that's what their regular customers are going to know about. That's what they're going to have seen reviews for. Those are the books that they are bred to want, have demand for, you know. So that's why when you walk into a store, you're going to see a lot of the same books from one store to the next.
So what's the lesson here for smaller publishers who don't have access to big name authors?
You build your brand.
And not just the author brand.
And not just your cattle brand. You really need to look at things that you can do. And one of the major, I've been calling this one for, you can tell me how many years because I don't remember, that the biggest shift in publishing is becoming series recognition, which is how a publisher brands itself.
So a series, what is a series?
A series is a bunch of books that have continuity together. Like, this is one series.
The Simple History.
And so this volume is about Hawaii, and it's the history of Hawaii. It's one little volume. You know, we have 13 titles in this series. You know, they're all about different unrelated parts of world history. And then this is a different one, the Scene History series. This one is about punk in Lower East Side Manhattan in the early 80s, and how there was a large crossover from second generation people who had whose parents had survived the Holocaust, you know.
Which, and that's what, like, the series is about, or what the book
this
is
about? Is what this issue is about. Similar to the Simple History series, the Scene History series each focuses on, like, a micro scene at a certain period in time.
And they're by different authors. So you can have a series, like in fiction, this, I feel like most people are familiar with fictional series where you have, like, you know, between 2 and 20
a million
books that are all part of the same world and have the same characters. But in nonfiction, you can also have series that are brought together by either the same author or a similar topic or a similar subject matter.
One of my favorite series when I was growing up was called A Graphic Guide, and it had very simple books that would break out a topic like political science, and then I got really into Adonian's Real World series, where, you know, they spelled out everything from, like, you know, the JFK assassination to, like, the concept of the American presidency in general. And, you know, it really just helped to have these digestible looks at something that I didn't know anything about at one time, and then I had enough information to know what aspects of it I was interested in later. I had no idea who the author was. I had never heard of the publisher, but the fact that there was continuity in the design of the book covers throughout those series led me to buy one to another to another to another.
I feel like the Idiot's Guides are the gold standard of this.
The Idiot's Guide was the copy. What's the yellow one called?
For Dummies.
Oh, yeah. Wiley's For Dummies series is certainly the gold standard here. So you have, like, Twitter for Dummies or Home Repair for Dummies. They have sold tens of millions of those books. And it's not flattering, but people really latch onto the idea of, like, I am a beginner at this topic, and I want to get my feet wet. Maybe Swimming for Dummies. But so
Beginning for Dummies.
That is a strong advantage as even a small press. Mm-hmm. You know, you can be out of the gate packaging all of your books in series. Nonfiction, fiction, doesn't matter.
Can we talk about some small presses that do this really well? Like the video games one, what are they called? Boss Fight. Mm-hmm. They have an amazing series. It's all by different authors, people writing about their favorite video games.
And then there's another one called Remember the Internet, where they all write about historical eras on the internet that are now forgotten, like the beginning of when bulletin board systems were first connected to the World Wide Web, or, you know, the early eras of MySpace, or, you know, because the technology is changing so fast that, you know, it is important to think of that in terms of, like, a historical era.
So, as well as authors and series, you can also brand your whole publishing company. This is less common, but
and it's more complicated. But, so, you know, typically the way this is done similarly is by having a common trim size, having common design elements. You know, one thing that Hawthorne does is they have a very unique trim size where it's a little narrower and a little taller, and then all of their books look the same. And you know it's a Hawthorne book just by peeping at it. And, you know, similarly, a lot of other publishers do this, or, you know, children's publishers do this really common, like Little Golden Books, if you're familiar with those. You know, they really created that template for children's. And, you know, lots of other, you know, newer children's publishers are doing that too, where, you know, they'll say, like, okay, this is our historical women biopic series, or, you know, this is one about unique incidences in science happening to, or this is one about outdoor activities for children. And then, you know, you can publish more and more books as you find new authors that are writing that kind of subject.
So, are there any downsides to branding yourself as a publisher?
Well, you do sort of paint yourself into a little bit of a box, you know, because what happens then is that, you know, if some stores don't like the aesthetic, or if some stores don't get what you're doing, or a lot of times what happens if they don't sell the other books in the series, it can work both ways, you know, because sometimes they'll say, oh, I'm only interested in this one, but the way the trim size and the development doesn't really work without having a shelf full of the other books in the series. Mm-hmm. So that can either bite you if they're like, I want this one to look like the other books in my store. Or in some cases, they'll say, okay, well, I'll take the whole series because, you know, which is often why working in series is the greatest boon.
What about like doing what Penguin does and putting your logo on the cover?
Well, you don't want to do that when you're a small press because it looks cheap, and if you don't have name recognition yet, it doesn't do anything for you. It doesn't give you name recognition, and it doesn't do what the function of the book cover should be, which is to tell store accounts and readers why they want that book. You know, almost nobody is going to buy that book because of who the publisher is, you know. Once you've done, you know, if you have very specialized publishing, if you're publishing books about how to repair espresso machines, then the name of your press might matter if you work with dozens of different authors, or if you do highly specialized photography or architecture books. You know, those kinds of arts books can matter a little more with who the publisher is. But in general, you want to avoid it because it just looks like you don't know what you're doing.
I think there is something to be said for, like, having a brand identity, even if you're not communicating it really blatantly to the book trade.
Yeah.
Like, you know, having, like, a really great logo that you're proud of and putting it on banners. And, like, whenever you do an event, have your branding at the event. And, like, on your website, have your branding. And as you build your audience of fans, like, you'll be able to sell them books across series. Like, you know, like if you have a subscription program like we do, or when you're at events, like people might come for the self-help books and leave with a book about punk music.
So when you're starting out, you don't want to put the name of your press on the book cover because it looks cheap and it doesn't do what the book cover needs to do, which is tell the store accounts why they should have the book and who it's for and how to sell it. And it doesn't tell the reader why they want to buy the book, because you're a new press, you don't have established history or credibility yet, outside of, like, your friends who are going to buy it regardless because they're your friends. Whereas, you know, when we had 100 or so titles, you know, we went a little hog wild with putting our logo on things and putting it, you know, and because people would buy our books because they were our books. You know, we were the publisher, that was what made it interesting to them. And then they could assess, you know, that something was interesting because we published it. And, you know, that does go pretty well, you know, once you have a little bit of a name. But then what happens is, you know, you've published, you know, 500 or so books, and, you know, not everyone is of interest to every person anymore, or they age out of it, or they have new interests that grew in a different direction, or, you know, they kind of got burnt out. So it really does show you the advantage of series more than the advantage of just using your press as your branding. Though the more we do consumer facing events, like things, well, you know, when that's a thing again.
It'll happen again.
Things someday. Like RollerCon is an event that we do.
Pride.
Yeah, things like that where, you know, at places like that your brand and your logo are really important because it's the recognition, it's how people will remember you later, it's how people will recognize you if they're already familiar with you. And, you know, similarly, like your website, if somebody reads and buys your book and they want to know more, that's, like, a great reason to have all that information and branding on your website. This has been A People's Guide to Publishing. I am your host, Joe Beal, author of A People's Guide to Publishing, founder and CEO of Microcosm.
I'm Ellie Blue, Editorial and Marketing Director here at Microcosm, and you can find our brand at microcosm.pub.
Till then, thanks for joining us once again.
Please send your questions to podcast@microcosmpublishing.com so we can answer them on future episodes.
And please give us 5 stars on iTunes and everywhere else that podcasts are reviewed.
You can find us on the internet at microcosm.pub.
On Twitter at microcosm.
On Facebook at Microcosm Publishing.
On Instagram at Microcosm_pub.
And here in Portland, Oregon on North Williams Avenue.
Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful week.